RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. This week, Jason and I are going to be talking about the latest episode, the penultimate episode for season three here. So are you ready, Jason?
Oh, yeah. I forgot you're talking to me. Yeah. I'm ready. Let me just put down my toolbox. Wrenches down here. Rub some grease on my face. Yeah, I'm all good.
All right. Cool. So maybe we can go back to your place to do that. No, that's weird. Sorry. That just made it really weird. I don't know what happened there. So
that's the only reason you came here, just to see me, right?
You did look good in red.
Oh, thank you.
So, Josh, why don't you tell us what we're covering this week?
We're not covering anything. We're uncovering. Oh no, we're not doing that anymore. Sorry. We're going to be talking about an episode that's almost at the end of season three, episode 22. End of season three. I'm not quite ready for this. I was enjoying this week.
I don't think they're ready for it either.
You don't think so?
I've been thinking about the last two season finales. By the time we're at this point, there's already been, there's something happening in Starling City, and we've already had the initial incursions into Starling City. You know, the Miraku army is already marching, or the earthquake machines already, sent out some shockwaves.
Plugged in.
We're not even back at the city yet. I just don't know. I keep thinking next week's a 2-hour finale. It's not. It's just a 1-hour one. I don't know how they're going to wrap this up. Well, too quickly, I think, is what the answer is. But anyway, we can talk a little bit more about that later. Let's cover episode 22 here now.
All right, episode 22. This is Your Sword. It aired on May 6th, 2015. It was written by Eric Olson, and the teleplay was by Ben Sokolowski and Brian Ford Sullivan, and was directed by Wendy Stransler. Well, Starling's reckoning is almost at hand. Soon, Al-Sahim will unleash the Alpha Omega virus upon them, killing what's left of Oliver Queen. Unless it's all a big lie, Oliver has been secretly working with Malcolm Merlyn and Tatsu to take down the League of Assassins from the inside and free himself from Ra's al Ghul's grip. The team's not quickly convinced, however. Tatsu herself has to come and talk them into going to Nanda Parbat to help Oliver stop the delivery of the virus, which of course is a trap. And that makes them even more suspicious of Oliver's intentions, even after they find out he's being forced to marry Nissa. Well, maybe if he can, what? No, he had to kill him. Well, hey, you know what? I want to just thank you guys all for joining us throughout these series. It's been fun, Everybody's dead now, it was fun. We had a good time, but
I think it's kind of weird. They just, they won't even finish the season. It's just like, that's the end of it right here.
Interesting ending. I'm not sure why. I think next week it's just a blank, just a still screen of the Arrow logo. I think there's an hour of that.
They were just going to run the credits for an hour. It's like, thanks to everybody who helped out all.
It can be one of those like in memoriam videos, just everybody that's died in Starling City since Oliver's been back. So, and every once in a while, he'll just walk by and kind of wave, a little photobomb wave smile.
Calculations are correct, the next week will be the 69th episode of the series. That's a lot.
That is
talking about this for quite a while.
We have. That is a lot of show briefs that I've had to come up with. And I'm running out of ideas. Luckily, I've got the boss to sing in the background, so that'll help me a little bit.
Yes.
At least today it helps. So, I have a feeling that maybe something will be up and a couple people will be back next week at least, yeah?
Yeah. The Flash is going to show up. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, yeah, he's still around. He wasn't in that cell.
No, he wasn't in there. So, okay. And Oliver and Roz are going to go. Oh, and probably Tatsu, you know, just they're going to keep her prisoner and hold her. You know, they're going to bring her with them next week. We'll see.
You know what? I think I do know what the finale is. I know what, you know, we're not into the speculation yet to the end of the show, but I'm thinking it's just like road trip to Starling City with Oliver and Roz, you know, just the whole thing, just a road trip, you know, and they only have one tape, you know, with yeah. It's probably a Bruce Springsteen album, right?
Yeah. Is it next week's episode? Is it called The Road to Starling City? Because that would be really sweet.
That would, yeah. A comedy ensues.
Yes. Yeah, starring Al Saheem and Al Saghul.
So. Maybe not. I think we're getting a little maybe off the idea of what the season is. But hey, right. It could work. It could work.
Let me cover the news, and then we can get into just talking about the episode here. So,
okay.
First off, very, very happy birthday to Stephen Amell on the day that we're recording here. He is officially 34 years young, which, boy, he seems like he's younger than that.
Yeah.
I wish I looked that good when I was 34.
Just as a warning, Mr. Amell, just 6 more years before you start looking like me, because that's what happens.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens, because I looked like you at 34.
You okay, Josh?
Yeah,
you all right?
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I was choking on that lie. That was just too big.
I was really going to say, I might have to take a drink there.
Yeah, that was you might need a couple for that lie. That was a huge one.
And we just got an announcement the other day that it is now official. DC's Legends of Tomorrow is going to be the new spinoff show. It is coming. CW has picked up an order for that series for next season. Sight unseen. At least pilot unseen. I'm sure there was a brief and or a
You don't think they showed him anything?
I think they showed him that Cage Man, or what was it? Fight Club. Arrow and Flash Fight Club.
Okay, you know, that's it, huh?
I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something else that they've got. Obviously, they've had some actors cast for a while, so I think they've had time to shoot some stuff. But I was talking to my coworker today about the show, and he's like, "No, I'm really not familiar with it." And I'm like, "Well, did you see the Steel Cage Match special that they did, or the advertisement they did, the Fight Club one?" And he's like, "No." So I showed him the three minute trailer, and he's like, "Why did they make that?" And I'm like, "I don't know, just to promote the shows."
Yeah,
and I go, "This is what it's going to be like."
You're probably right. I mean, they probably don't have much to show, but they probably have scripts, you know, or at least story layout ideas.
They've got a couple scripts. And, you know, they probably have had costume fittings and stuff like that for the characters. Obviously, at least 50% of the characters we're talking about on the show, people would be familiar with from watching the current CW television shows, Arrow and Flash. So,
oh, sure.
You know, and then it's they'll like, introduce okay, we're going to have these guys, and they're going to go and do stuff with these new people. Here's what they look like, you know, and they're going to do this. And so, I don't know. We're going to have a couple characters from this Legends of Tomorrow show guest star on the season finale of The Flash, which is the week after next. Arrow's season finale is next week, and Flash has its season finale the week after that. So, so look forward to that.
Now, I heard an interesting theory about how we're going to see some of these characters, some of these Legends characters on Flash. And it wasn't maybe what you and I had thought originally. I can't remember
who tweeted it out.
It might have been Sierra Renee that plays Hot Girl on Legends. She tweeted out something about
tweeting a lot of stuff,
being on The Flash.
Yes.
Yeah, and so... somebody kind of speculated that maybe instead of actually being a part of the Flash show, it would just be like a little preview trailer teaser kind of thing for the series during the Flash, which I think you and I had, I should give you credit. You talked about maybe a couple weeks ago on one of the shows.
Yep. I think I was talking about that on our Scarlet Velocity show that they might tease that. I think that if people have been watching The Flash, you know, it's getting pretty crazy with time travel and all. And I think what might happen now is Barry goes a little too fast and time travels. He thinks he knows what he's doing. And of course he ends up in some place he's not expecting to. And there's the cast of The Legends of Tomorrow. And they're like, "Hey, how you doing, Flash?" And he's like, "What?" So I don't know.
He went into the wrong door or something.
Well,
he walked into the women's restroom and they're all there. So that's
kind of, it'll be kind of one of those like Doctor Who things, you know, because Doctor Who never really seems to be able to control where he's going or when, you know, he's close enough. But also as an aside, fans of Arrow should check out Flash next week because Oliver, in some form, he's wearing his Al Saheem gear.
Oliver Queen is dead.
Sorry, Al Saheem will be guest starring on The Flash, assisting Barry and Firestorm against the Man in Yellow, a.k.a. Reverse Flash, a.k.a. Harrison Wells, a.k.a. Eobard Thawne. I think I covered it there.
Maybe.
So.
I've always sort of pictured the League of Assassins to be, you know, people you could just call when you needed something serious. You just hire them out, isn't that? That seems to me like that's something they would do in between getting ready to destroy some culture or, you know, whatever they need to do that year. But
yeah,
that interesting tie-in, not an interesting tie-in, but interesting that they've shown images of Stephen Amell dressed in the Al Saheem costume on teasers of Flash. Some people are criticizing that big time, but you know it's taken some of the sting out of these reveals on Arrow. You know,
yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about Arrow taking the sting out of Arrow's reveals.
We will at the
end. I got two more news pieces here, though. Also, congratulations to Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg, who are the showrunners on Flash, but they've also are co-producers here on Arrow. They got their Supergirl pilot picked up for a full season order over at CBS.
Wow.
So probably no crossover with Arrow or with Flash. Never say never, obviously, because they share production companies and stuff like that. But that looks like it will be an interesting series, and I know I'm definitely going to be checking it out next season. Just going back to Legends of Tomorrow, we don't know when it will premiere next season, nor how many episodes it was assigned or allotted for. So, again, we had heard rumors it was going to be a mid-season replacement or a mid-season show between, like, during the winter break, kind of like they did with Agent Carter during the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. winter break. So if that's the case, it would be something like 8 to 10 episodes, but obviously we'll find out more probably this summer, and we'll keep you apprised on our summer special episodes that we do here on Green Justice.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what show they would put it in between the winter break of, you know, what time slot, because there's nothing really over at CBS that's in this universe or genre, really. I don't think CBS has any superhero shows, do they?
No. Well, CBS with Supergirl is going to be a regular series show, like, you know, just during the regular season. I was talking about Legends of Tomorrow being.
Oh, Legends of Tomorrow. Okay. I thought you were talking about Supergirl. I gotcha. Okay.
No, Supergirl is going to be a regular, you know, it may be up against Flash or Arrow. You know, we don't know what day it's going to air or anything like that. So, but anyway, as far as, you know, anything coming next season on the CW relating to Arrow, stay tuned to our summer specials here, and we'll keep you apprised of that. And then also we got some first images of Stephen Amell as Casey Jones in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. So I've seen a couple. I saw one where he's just dressed in his hoodie with a hockey stick. I think it was a hockey stick.
Yeah.
And then another one with his hockey mask, which looks I think that looks pretty cool.
He looks like Casey Jones. I mean, I saw pictures of him, and I thought it was neat, but it wasn't anything shocking or anything. I mean, I thought he made a good Casey Jones.
Now, I thought Casey had longer hair, but I never really watched the cartoons as a kid. It was a little after my time.
Yeah, me too. I think you're right about the longer hair. I mean, it was the 90s, I think. So he probably did have longer hair. But as far as the mask and stuff went, it looked very similar to the cartoon, at least from what I remember. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fans are like shouting at me right now. But sorry about that. Hope you guys like it.
So let's get back to This Is Your Sword. So penultimate episode, meaning the second to last episode for the season. And Mark Guggenheim had confirmed this a few weeks ago that just as with season 1 and 2, this episode is named after a Bruce Springsteen song. Previous penultimate episodes have included Darkness on the Edge of Town and Streets of Fire, both from the Darkness on the Edge of Town album. This song was from the High Hopes album, if you guys are Springsteen fans. I just wanted to read the chorus because you might not have heard it under Josh's lovely reading of our opening brief. But it says, "This is your sword. This is your shield. This is the power of love revealed. Carry them with you wherever you go and give all the love that you have in your soul." Which I feel there's that's kind of the underlying tone of this episode. Unfortunately, this whole season's been about Oliver's identity, right? You and I have talked about that for off and on all season, with him trying to decide who he is. Should he be the Arrow? Is he going to continue to kill? Should he give up being the Arrow and just be Oliver Queen? You know, and oh, poor me, poor me, poor me. I got to tell you that I feel like this last maybe 5 episodes have not really, maybe less than that, maybe only 4 or something like that, have not really been about Oliver, that it's been more about Tatsu and Maseo for some reason. I mean, and this episode, I feel there's this huge culmination of their stories. Now, it does intertwine with Oliver and everything like that. So I guess let's just start talking about Oliver, and we can get into talking about Tatsu and Maseo as they come up here.
I have a few ideas that, frankly, I'll take your opinion on to see if they're even valid ideas. But
okay.
And I may be stretching, but yeah. We'll see. I don't know.
So I'm going to say, if you guys have been listening for the last couple of weeks, I've been really hard on Oliver and his the show explaining to us Oliver's story, because they have seemed to be very serious and have been trying very hard to get us to believe that Oliver has in fact joined the League of Assassins. He's dismissed his friends, he's turned his back on Starling City, and he is full steam ahead wanting to be a League of Assassins, the head of the League of Assassins, which is just utterly ridiculous. But the show has believed it so wholeheartedly, that I don't know. It just seemed ridiculous. So in continuation of that theme, Oliver now needs to reveal to his friends, we find out very early on in this episode that he is in fact not serious about this, that it is a plan. Like, it's been his plan to, as I think I had said, infiltrate the League and kind of destroy them from the inside. I didn't really think he was working with Malcolm in the way that he did it. But his next step is, I have the perfect person that you can use to tell my friends about my plight. Introduce them to Tatsu, who they've never met and have no idea who it is. Why does Oliver think that Tatsu would have any luck convincing his friends to help? Especially if they wouldn't, they wouldn't believe Malcolm, and Malcolm's the one who's presenting her.
Right.
What the what?
All right. Well, I didn't have as much problem with this as some people did. Okay. First of all, he has nobody else. He has nobody else that knows enough about the League, knows about what's going on, that could tell them, other than Malcolm. Now, they're not going to believe Malcolm, or they're not going to trust Malcolm no matter what he says. Even if they know what Malcolm's saying is true, they're not going to trust him.
Well, and I I did not really have a problem with him using Malcolm as his go-to guy.
Right.
I mean, like, Malcolm makes a perfect point, right? You know, who's got better track record of lying, deceit, and, you know, has worked with the League of Assassins? Well, this guy, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, but what I was getting at, though, so they're not gonna trust him, but so he has to find somebody, and he only knows one other person that could do it. He can't trust Maseo. Maseo won't do it. Can't do it. So he uses Tatsu because I think he trusts that his friends are smart enough to make the connection and see how she would be telling the truth. First of all, second of all, I think he knows her that she's good enough. I don't know if I want to say pure, but you know what I'm saying. Like she's honest and honorable enough.
Honorable, yeah,
yeah. And Diggle knows about Akio. He knows that story. I think Oliver kind of opened up to him a little bit. I think they were talking about Maseo. Is what
Maseo told him? I think, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe. I can't remember.
Maseo, who did Maseo break down and tell the other week? Because he was. Yeah, because he was talking to Diggle about being a father.
And, oh, okay, yeah.
Right, and said, you know, when you bury your son and the last words you tell him are a lie, you know, it'll be over for you too, or something like that.
Right. So I can see, I mean, it's a very tenuous connection, but
yeah.
It's all Oliver has, you know? It's all he needs their help. Now, sooner than he expected, and so that's all he had. So I could see why he goes, well, look, send Tatsu. I mean, that's what we've got. They're not going to believe you.
Yeah, I mean, he's really on. You're right. It's such a tenuous thread he's on. I mean, he's on his last hope, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is really pulling at straws here because he's in so deep. I mean, I feel it's you know, it's kind of a metaphorical quicksand. He's slipping fast, and he's just trying to grab any kind of purchase he can get. And Tatsu is the only one.
I think he knew that it was probably going to be like that, but he had no choice. He had to kind of jump into this, you know, waist deep from the very beginning. So
yeah. Now, you know, obviously he has been playing this as Roz says, or I guess as. Was it Roz? I guess an elaborate ruse, right? I mean, it's all coming out here. Is Ra's al Ghul, do you think he's really like a big pushover? It seems like these characters, and again, it goes back to some of the stuff that happened with Maseo that I've been talking about over the past couple of weeks where somebody does something wrong, Roz kills him, and Maseo does something wrong, and then he proffers himself and says, you know, oh, please kill me. I'm dishonorable and I've dishonored the league. And he's like, oh no, because you come to me and you say that, then you honor the league and you can live. And in this episode, it's like, you know, Oliver, you're going to do all this stuff. And he's, you know, he's not seeing any of the changes on Oliver's face. And then Malcolm comes to Roz and says, oh, wait a second. Oliver is the one that, you know, told us about the plane, and he's been lying to you. And then, of course, forces Oliver to really double down again. And Roz is like, fine, we're just going to go ahead with the marriage and stuff like that. He's
is
a horrible leader.
Maybe he's not worried about that stuff. Maybe that kind of fits in with his plan. And, you know, this would kind of,
fits in with Roz's plan or
yeah.
Oliver's plan?
No, Roz's plan.
Roz's plan, okay.
You might have to help me. I'm trying to think, you know, back to the character of Roz in the comics, but he's very arrogant. He's very sure of himself. He thinks he's the best. He thinks he's better than everybody else. And I don't think he worries about little stuff like that. So I don't think he is... would ever fully buy into Oliver going along with this until Oliver has done all these, you know, horrific things, which is mm-hmm. one of the reasons he wants him to do these things. So I think he's kind of ready for anything. I don't think he believed Maseo, but I think he kept him around to use. I don't think he I think he's a little bit more wily than they think he is.
Okay. So
I'm not sure,
but do you think he's just arrogant enough? Do you think Roz is arrogant enough to believe that either A, people can't put anything over on him, and so they aren't, or B, that they are putting things over on him, but he's aware of those things so that, you know, it's fine. As long as I know what people are doing, you know, I'll give them enough rope to hang themselves or something like that.
I think more of the latter. I think B.
Okay.
I think he's, I mean, kind of a combination of what you said. I think he's arrogant enough to think, well, if they do lie to me, or if they, you know, try to fool me, I'll figure it out and then I'll take care of it, or I'll kill them, or I'll, you know, whatever. You know, he's like, what was the purpose of him capturing, you know, Diggle and Felicity and Ray? And I mean, all the, what was the point? He could have just killed him then. He's going to have Oliver kill him anyway. He's going to kill him. So why hold him? Why not just kill him then?
I think it's again, because he wanted Oliver to do it, right? So it's
right.
Just that prove your fealty to me sort of thing.
Yeah, but he held him for a while. Why not just lock him in there and go, okay, start here.
Monologue.
You're going to be Ra's al Ghul. So
that's what the villains
think.
Do.
Yeah, of course. but I think he's arrogant enough to think that he's not going to have any issues with these guys no matter what they do. And he was like that when he stuck the sword through Oliver, you know? I mean, he was fighting him with both hands behind his back at first,
yeah.
Not even a sword, right? He just does that. He never worries. And when somebody thinks that they've kind of got the upper hand, that's when he shows you he's in charge. And he did that to Nyssa in this episode. When he grabbed her face, you know, when they're
yeah.
talking and he's telling her the story of how he met her mother.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm glad that just didn't turn into 9 seasons of him explaining how he met her mother, because
it's just a story of a series of concubines that he's gone through and why they weren't the perfect ones.
And then I got her a blue French horn. So, okay, I mean, I feel, and maybe other people feel this way too. I'd love to hear our listeners' thoughts on this, because I only have a few people I talk to about some of these shows, and I know there are a lot more people that listen to the show than I know in my circle of friends that I talk about this with. But I feel like the A storyline, right, the Oliver storyline with Ra's al Ghul, all the stuff that is about Oliver, I feel they've really lost their grip on that in kind of the last quarter of the season here. The sub storylines have been much more interesting. And I don't know, I feel, you know, because I feel like they've lost their characterization because they've done this dramatic, like kind of out of the blue change with Oliver, and we don't know what's going on. And Ra's al Ghul doesn't seem to be really well defined at all. You know, it's just, oh, he's supposed to be this big bad guy, but, and, you know, and he's in Nanda Parbat, which is way, 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 way far away. But everybody just kind of comes and goes and comes and goes. And this week I'm thinking, it's like, isn't this like the third week? Because there's it's like a week is occurring in between each of these episodes,
uh-huh.
right? Felicity mentioned this, that it was a week ago that, you know, last episode happened. Like, they're in Nanda Parbat, and then they come home, and then they go back to Nanda Parbat and get caught and come home, and then they go back to Nanda Parbat and die. It's just, they're getting the frequent flyer miles racked up here, but there's just, I'm just not feeling it with the characterizations, or, you know, something's missing. And maybe going back and rewatching the last few episodes, knowing what we presumably know now, maybe that would help. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you entirely, and I think that the idea of this season's sort of thread between the episodes with Oliver's identity, I think that it's a good one, but the way they played it out, it seems like they had an ultimate goal. I may have even mentioned this last week, but they had an ultimate goal in mind, and so they started it at the beginning of the season by killing off Sarah, and it just took too long to get to the ultimate goal. Not that I couldn't wait. It's just that I don't think they didn't seem to really have enough meaty storyline to last that long. If they'd done some other things with it, it could have lasted the season. And so I don't disagree with you. I actually really, really liked this episode. I liked this episode more than I liked last week's episode.
I agree with you there. Yeah, I agree that this was better than last week's episode.
So, you know, I kind of can see some of the things they're doing, but I also agree with you that maybe it could have been done in other ways that made it a little bit more of a dramatically interesting storyline for Oliver. But you mentioned that they're the way they're portraying him, trying to really make us believe that he's bad. I think part of our entertainment culture now, especially with all these comic book things, is that we've really been exposed to that kind of idea for so long now, like you and I, that, I mean, there's really nothing they could do to make us believe that he's ever going to turn bad. I mean, he is the hero of the show, you know? Right. That's like saying Superman is, you know, he got exposed to some black kryptonite and he's going to be bad forever. That's it. Superman's a bad guy now. You know, he's a villain.
The show is called Superman.
Now he's a red and blue electrical superhero. And that's it. That's your Superman now. Enjoy it. Get used to it.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That would never happen.
Or, Superman's going to have a mullet for 3 years, and you're just going to have to enjoy
it. You are getting totally ridiculous now, Josh. Next thing you're going to say is they're going to kill off Superman, and he's going to stay dead.
Oh, okay. That just gives me nightmares. That's what I mean. You know what I mean? So I think maybe part of that is just that we're so used to those storylines that it almost takes a Game of Thrones-like shocker to make us really go, wow. But, you know, you said one, maybe if I go back and watch these, I think, again, if you watch this season overall as a season instead of just these individual episodes, I think that will flow a little bit better. Granted, you shouldn't have to do that, but I think it will.
I think it's probably a fine line between making something dramatically interesting and dramatically confusing.
I agree with you 100%, and that is a fine line.
They have slipped off the ledge a little bit towards the confusing side because it's just, I guess, I just don't feel strongly that the character motivations that at least that we're seeing on the Oliver storylines and stuff like that are truthful. It feels... it feels much more like the Deus Ex Machina. You know, it's the hand of the writer coming in and positioning characters because there's a story that they want to tell, which is probably the finale, right? Oh, we want to do this cool thing at the finale. Well, in order to get there, we have to do X, Y, and Z to the characters. All right, well, we've got these other cool things going. Oh, shoot, you know, we've only got like 4 episodes to go. Now we have to move the characters so dramatically that it's unnatural.
Well, yeah, I mean, you said it right there. And not only do they have to do X, Y, and Z in order to get there, but they also have to have a mini dramatic scene every hour in between those X, Y, and Zs. You know what I mean? So they've got this major dramatic thing they want to do at the end, but they also have to have 21 other minor dramatic scenes leading up to that. Mm-hmm. So, they threw a big one at you at the winter break. And it's got to be even bigger than that, you know? So I can see the challenge there, which is, you know, frankly, it's a challenge in any time you have a thing that's extended like that. That's why comic universes end up destroying themselves and starting again because they've used up so many of those ideas. So
I'll say again that I always find it more interesting if I know what the stakes are. And I know that there are things that characters know, or I know character motivations, and I don't know if I've shared this on the Arrow podcast here. I know I've talked about this on our S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. But if you know what the character's motivation is, and you know what the stakes are, and you know that certain characters don't know about other characters' motivations, that puts all sorts of things at at risk and at stake, and it heightens the dramatic tension. It's similar to the Chekhov's gun parable, which
is that when he was attacking Captain Kirk?
No. Anton Chekhov, the playwright.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So he says basically, if you introduce a gun, you know, on a mantel place at the beginning of the play, it needs to be fired by the end of the, you know, it has placed such a dramatic tension into the scene that it needs to be fired at some point later. And it's basically just everybody waiting for it to be fired. And there may not really be any drama in what's going on, but the audience adds their own sense of drama. It also Alfred Hitchcock's Bomb Under the Table, where he has two characters talking at a table, and he shows you there's a bomb under it set to explode in 5 minutes. Well, whatever they're talking about is going to be heightened because the audience knows that there's a bomb, but the characters don't.
Well, let me say this. I know that we're getting off on kind of a tangent, but it's a really interesting discussion here, and I know we have other things to talk about, but I think – I mean, I that is some of my favorite storytelling, and Alfred Hitchcock are some of my favorite movies. But I personally think, and I have thought about this a lot, especially recently with people talking about this, the comic book genre, movie genre, and TV shows, and I guess not just comic books, but any kind of action theater entertainment, right? I think they have kind of gotten away from that, and now they try to up themselves every time. They try to outdo what they did previously instead of sticking with, you know, a good quality story with that small dramatic tension there, you know? So they keep trying to make more bad guys or bigger threats or, you know, and instead I think they kind of get away from that dramatic tension, which doesn't have to be huge in order to still be a really good story that makes you kind of go, ah, you know? So,
dramatic tension is just the friction between two characters.
Right.
It doesn't have to be world threatening or, you know, galaxy spanning or anything like that.
I completely agree. And I kind of worry about that because I worry that it burns out genres, you know? I mean, and I was thinking about after seeing the Avengers this last weekend here, when this whole comic book stuff has the potential to burn itself out the way that action movies kind of did back in the 80s, you know, and they just kept trying to do it bigger and better.
Yeah. And then you start parodying yourself because what else is left after that, except just to kind of start making light of it. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we're kind of getting off on a tangent here, but I feel that these kind of discussions about the dramatic possibilities for the show, I mean, we wouldn't be talking about this stuff, I don't believe, if they were filling in these gaps for us, right? I mean, if there was...
Sure.
If you're being satisfied by that kind of thing, then, you know, you don't discuss it. You say how cool it is, and you move on, and you talk about some other stuff.
Yeah. Two more points for me just to kind of conclude my thoughts. One is, I am still really enjoying this show. I mean, despite our criticisms and our conversations about what we think is maybe a problem, I am still enjoying it. And I think, you know, that can happen where you'll have a storyline that, maybe that wasn't as interesting to me as the last storyline, but that doesn't mean that it's dead to me. You know, I mean, it can, season four may come and completely blow me away from episode one and take me in a new direction where I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of wish last season would have been kind of like this, you know? Mm-hmm. So I mean, I'm not giving up on it or anything like that. I love the show.
Usually you talk about a sophomore slump. I think this has got kind of a third season slump here. I think they might have overreached just a little bit, and I think some of the other things that have been road bumps, they were fun at the time, but now looking back, I'm seeing that some of these crossovers that they're doing between Arrow and The Flash, I appreciate the synergy they're trying to create between the universes and between the episodes because it really gets people interested in this kind of franchise element. But I think that slowed us down and detracted a little bit from the overall goals of the season, which is following Oliver's story.
Maybe so,
We've definitely had some cul-de-sacs along the way. Getting back to kind of Oliver's plan, which unfortunately we still really don't know what his plan is. All we know is that he knows he's got to bring Ra's al Ghul down. He's trying to do it from the inside, but now he's got less time to do it. And then the snake in the grass comes, you know, stifling out whatever it was that Ra's said about kicking the grass and getting the snake to come out. Malcolm comes out and is like, Ra's, he made me do it. He's the one that told me. So, and which, just the way John Berman plays it, you know, it seems so petty the way he's doing it. You know, basically he's doing it like to save his own skin, apparently. And it doesn't seem, you know, Ra's then confronts Al-Saheem, who's, you know, who denies all this and says, look at everything I've done. And you're going to believe this guy who's, you know, come back yet again, you know, and it's true. Malcolm really has no credibility left with the league as far as anyone's concerned. Is Malcolm breaking book, or is this all part of the plan?
Because of the way he did it, even the fact that he did it, it makes me think that maybe this was part of the plan. I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe so he would be with the group when Ra's made Oliver. Wait, no, Oliver didn't throw the stuff. He did he? Didn't he?
Did I?
He just told Oliver to close the gate or something.
Okay, the big plexiglass gate in the old castle.
It was an addition, you know. It was an upgrade. It's upgraded.
It detracts from the historical value of the property. That's all I'm going to say.
Lower the real estate value of Amanda Parbat. So it kind of got him back in there with him, or it gave Ra's the motivation to do it then or something. That's all I could kind of come up with as far as why. But yeah. I mean, I can't imagine with Malcolm's knowledge of the league that he would honestly expect Ra's to go, oh, it was Oliver? All right, dude. Well, thanks. Well, hey, you want to be Ra's al Ghul? You're not doing anything. What? Come on over here. Let's toss Oliver in there instead. I mean,
you're Ra's al Ghul. You're Ra's al Ghul. Everybody's Ra's al Ghul. it seemed to me like it was part of the plan. Yes, like it was Malcolm trying to maneuver himself back into the jail or whatever. As a quick aside, do you remember, I think it was last season, we talked about the weird little green pendant that Malcolm wears whenever he's in the Dark Archer outfit? So for people who haven't noticed, he has a necklace that's got a strange green pendant. It's kind of like, it looks like it, like a fishing lure, basically, like a weight. Two silver cones on the end of a green oval or a green cylinder or stone or something like that. Well, I also noticed that Oliver's wearing his arrowhead that Ra's gave him. So I'm wondering if, like, everybody's got a little totem that is their namesake in Arabic. So maybe, you know, that has something to do with him being the magician. Now, I never noticed Sarah wearing anything, but she was really never wearing standard issue League of Assassins outfits either, so...
Maybe Nyssa is League of Assassin language for, you know, cleavage or something. No, maybe not. Okay. I didn't mean to offend you, Nyssa. Yeah. I apologize. I didn't notice that arrowhead. That's cool.
So.
that was never an option. That's I didn't notice that. That was kind of interesting. I didn't see the arrowhead. But I like that idea. Unless it's
I'm wondering if the reason, and the other reason I bring that up is because I don't know if maybe that contains an antidote or something. You know, I don't know, because I really don't have any idea how they might escape here. But before we get to the escape and the death of everybody and everything, I want to talk about other death, which. This is the sequence. There are two sequences in this episode that really touched me, and probably because I have kids and I'm married. And the first one was Akio's death, which I think that came first.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that came first. Because then they went back, because we came back again to the dead body when Shreve was trying to, they were trying to get Shreve to revive him, but they said he had already passed at that point. So the death of Akio, and then the death of Maseo, and what really surprised me, so there's this great battle between Kitana and Sarab on this plateau, and, you know, you think she's beaten, and then she skewers Maseo, but they then, like, that's not the end of the scene. There's still, like, another minute after it, and it's that fact that she sings the same song to him that she sang to Akio. It was really touching, and just the tragedy of Maseo's character. He talks about how he's not strong enough to go back to Tatsu. So basically he's saying he's weak and he cannot escape from his prison being, you know, the confines that he's put himself in, you know, because he wasn't there for his wife when his child died. He wasn't there for his child. You know, he did all these things and he hasn't been able to protect anybody. And it's not apathy, I guess. It's just, he doesn't make the right he doesn't make the right decisions. He's just not making decisions. He's not choosing to pick a path. He's just letting life push him along, I guess. And then he thanks her for freeing him from his prison. It was just, I mean, that was just really touching and a really beautiful sequence in this episode that really stood out to me.
Yeah, it was an amazing scene and well played. The scene with Maseo was even more powerful to me than the one with Akio. Maybe because they were both together, you know, maybe it was after that. But
right, because, well, I think that's the point. I mean, I think that was the point of that sequence because it mirrors the scene with Akio. And, you know, and also she says, you know, because he says, Maseo says, tell Akio I'm sorry. And she's like, you can tell him yourself. But she's not doing it in a mean way.
No.
She kills him and then she comforts him as he passes on. Oh, just, it's just.
Yeah.
I'm getting goosebumps again just thinking about this.
It was good.
So, had some questions about Tatsu. How did she get her sword if it's supposed to be passed on to the first son? This was a question of, I think it was either Malcolm or Ra's al Ghul. I can't remember who.
Well, Malcolm said, you're not the son.
Okay, that was it. Yeah, where he was looking at the sword when they were getting ready to leave on the trip.
Right.
Right. So so that was pretty cool. I don't know if you noticed, she, you know, on her mask, which is cool, her outfit matches the current Kitana outfit that is in the DC 52. Very, very, very close. It's also very similar to the Kitana character that we've seen in some promotional stills from Suicide Squad, because Kitana is going to be in that movie. Different actress playing her. But she also had little rising suns painted on her eyelids with her eyeshadow.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
So she had normal eyeshadow on, and then there was a little red rising sun on her closed eyelid, which was interesting. I had not noticed that. I don't think she was actually wearing that in any of the other shots, only when she puts on her costume. So,
when she closes her eyes in Kitana class, they still think that she's awake and paying attention.
All right, anything else you want to mention about Tatsu or Maseo or Akio before we move on from that?
Well, you know, you mentioned this was a very centered story around that family, around at least Tatsu and Maseo. And I don't disagree with you in this episode, but I can see where that is important. And we've always said that the flashbacks serve one purpose of describing how Oliver became the hero he is today. And I think it did that to a point, but it did center around them a little bit, which like you said, was a little bit more interesting than the Oliver story. So that was all. I'll sum that one up, because we got a couple other things we want to cover.
Okay. So everyone dies at the end of this episode. And so it was very interesting. The structurally, the way they intercut it with the marriage of, you know, basically a forced marriage between Oliver and Nyssa intercut with everybody dying. Reminded me very much of The Godfather, in the original movie, intercut with when Michael wipes out all the other families during the christening of his son.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got this very sacred ceremony, and of course the words that the lady was reading, you know, kind of bridge the two filmic shots and stuff like that. So I tweeted to Mark Guggenheim at the end of the episode, maybe you guys should tell CW not to show scenes from next week's episode right after you kill, quote unquote, your entire cast, because it kind of diminishes the what we just saw on screen when you see, spoiler alert here, everybody, when you see Diggle and Felicity and everybody running around in next week's episode.
But again, it goes back to what I said. I mean, did you really think they were dead? If they hadn't shown that, was anybody really going to believe that they just killed all of the main characters but one?
I did not. And dramatically, who does it serve to see them die? So here's the thing. I'm going to kill you, Mr. Bond. Here's the laser. All right, I got to go into the other room now, so I'll give you some time to escape. Who does it serve to show them dying? If the bad guy's gone away, why do we have to see them die? The reason they're showing them dying is to inform the audience. So they're trying to give an emotional reaction to us. That's the point of film, right? It's like you show something so that the audience can know about it. And if a character is not observing something, they're not seeing what you're seeing. You're seeing it as the audience. So now Roz doesn't know that they've died or that they've escaped or whatever. It's just.
Well, I don't know that they know yet either. I don't know that they yet. Yeah. There's no reason they couldn't have had just Roz throw it in there and then watch them through that plexiglass door and then see them
for a
all
few
die.
Minutes, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then
we can
and
get
then
married
walk
in
out.
Just a minute. I got to watch these people die. Yeah. So how are they getting out of this? Because they removed Tatsu because she was inoculated.
Yeah.
So
I'm
wondering.
That's your foreshadowing right there.
Right. I'm wondering if if they got some blood from her and made up a. Injection that people all, you know, of course, like we're going to see a flashback next week right before they leave at Ferris Air when everybody shows up and after he says, hey, that's a nice sword, and everybody getting on the plane. And then Malcolm's going to come around and go, hang on, I got to give you guys a shot. All right. And why do we need a shot? Hey, don't worry about it. And
don't
you know,
worry about
he's going to lie to them or something.
Like, well, he would have told them. They know why they were going.
Yeah, I don't know.
But except they didn't know that they were dying.
Right, because they were dying like they didn't know what was happening.
At some point, I figured that they got inoculated or Oliver did it. I worried a little bit about Ray because it didn't seem like he was with them at first. And see, they couldn't do it at the airport because they didn't know Ray was with her. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I heard a little bit about Ray, except that I know that he's still going to be around.
There are a lot of people that cannot – their suspension of disbelief is a very strong and brittle sort of piece of their imagination. My suspension of disbelief is a very stretchy, rubbery sort of thing, and it can go very, very far. This went further than my suspension of disbelief could handle.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I can't be an apologist for this because it could have been done smoother. It could have been done a little bit better. But
that being said,
I was okay with it.
Yeah, that being said, did Roz use his only vial of Alpha Omega on the prisoners? Because he did have the big case with the one vial in it. So... As one of my coworkers said, well, no, he didn't because they're not really dead, so that wasn't really the Alpha Omega, which I'm like, okay, that might be the point. But Tatsu only delivered him this one vial. Was he able to synthesize more? We've only ever seen the one vial. Is he all of a sudden going to have, like, gallons of this stuff next week? I don't know. Again, good questions. They're not telling me enough, and they're making my imagination run too wild, and that counteracts the drama that they're trying to impose on us, I guess. So.
Yeah, and I can see where that would be a problem with the drama, because you know you like that tension, but you got to have those balances, like you were talking about.
I'm just going to do two other things here, really quick.
Yeah, let's do it. I was going to say I don't have an answer for you.
Okay, yeah. One thing I thought was really cool was Felicity throwing her tablet and, quote, killing the guy. And then when he falls over, there's the arrow. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's more like it. So very funny. That was a great way to do that scene. And then before Ray and Felicity left, Ray has Felicity sign something. And she doesn't pay attention to what it is. Like, I'm like, what is she signing? What are you signing? Why are you signing something that you... What is this? Oh, it's nothing. It's just business stuff. That's how corporate takeovers happen. But then we see it's a transfer of ownership. So what is Ray doing? What is your thought? What's going on?
Well, I mean, my first thought was that he was giving the company to Felicity. I'm not sure that's what he's doing. I think he's giving the company back to Oliver. I think he's giving it back to Queen. I think he's, you know, it's going to be Queen Consolidated and Ray's going to be out of the picture. That's
where it is as well. It's weird that he would be doing that because at this point he doesn't know that Oliver's faking it. I mean, it's like Oliver's gone. So, oh, you know what? Maybe he's giving it to Thea. I just considered that.
Could be. I think Felicity's going to be actually president of the company, but sign it over back to the
Queen. Back to Queen Consolidated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
Interesting. Okay.
Cool. I like Ray. He's such a nice guy.
Hey, guys. Did I miss anything?
He's just, I would like to have Ray as a friend. You know, I'm not sure I'd want Oliver as a friend. I like Oliver and you know, he's awesome, but I'm not sure I'd want him as a friend.
Yeah.
Ray, I would love to have Ray as a friend.
Right. My son's been rewatching Chuck, and he's to the part where Brandon Routh is on Chuck.
Right.
And it's just... It's funny watching him on that now that I've, you know, been watching him as Ray Palmer here for most of the season. So.
He played a bad guy on Chuck, didn't he?
Yeah, he was part of the bad guys, but then sometimes a good guy. Yeah, he was kind of waffled back and forth on that. So say we got one piece of feedback this last week from Facebook. I was wondering if you would mind sharing that with everybody.
Yeah, let me tell you what Matt said on our Facebook page. He said, two theories I'd love to hear thoughts on. What do people think about Vandal Savage as a Season 5 villain? I think he'd be great.
Now, he says Season 5. I was wondering if he had meant Season 4. But anyway, continue on and we can discuss.
Yeah, yeah, I guess I'll read the whole thing. We'll talk about it. But what do people think about the Lazarus Pit as a portal to another timeline? Could be why Thea recognized Malcolm as her dad, but not Ollie as her brother, and her mom would still be alive because Slade wouldn't have killed her mom to get Ollie.
Okay, so Vandal Savage is a Season 5 villain. I responded to Matt about this, and I said, that's a really interesting theory. It sounds like they're going to do Damian Dark as Season 4 villain because they kind of brought him up I think it was last week. And I said, maybe what if Damian Dark then turns out to be Vandal Savage? Because Vandal Savage is a very dark kind of character and, you know, it would totally be within the realm of possibility that he would take a name like that. And Matt said he hadn't even considered that and thought that was a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, I like that idea. Okay. Vandal Savage seems very much to me like Ra's al Ghul. As a character. So I think they could do a lot of stuff with him, but I'd love to see them go a different route than they've gone so far in any of the first three seasons. And I didn't come up with a good solution to that, but I'd love to see something a little bit different.
Yeah, because you can't just have like a metahuman villain that he goes up against, kind of like Deathstroke again. I mean, anything right now, you know, because he's kind of done... He's done a peer, you know, an archer sort of villain. He's had this super meta human villain that he really needed help with, and now he's, you know, doing this sort of immortal, long lived, super villain sort of.
Right.
So Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go.
Based on the flashbacks, I can see General Shreve maybe being a big part of season four, unless they kill him off in the finale. But this was the first episode when I'm like, yeah, there we go. Yeah, why couldn't he have been like that all season?
They really haven't used him to potential.
This
was a better episode with him. And then the Lazarus Pit is a portal to another timeline. That's a really interesting idea. I don't think there's any comic book version where that has happened, but I really couldn't explain Thea recognizing her dad but not Ollie. So that's as good an explanation as anything that I would have thought of.
You know, he asked, what do people think about the Lazarus Pit as a portal to another timeline? I think I would hate it. Just honestly, you said, you know, what'd you call it? Your believability or
suspension of disbelief.
Suspension of disbelief. Yeah, there we go. That would not just stretch mine too far for this particular series. It would snap it back and it would disintegrate. It's a little too much for me, I think.
Okay. So, not really too many references this particular episode. There was a great part where, in John Barrowman's kind of overacted style, where he says to the assembled folk, who include Diggle, Felicity, and Laurel, he says, "None of you are good actors," which it's totally something I could just hear John Barrowman saying. So I thought that was really funny, just as kind of a meta line. In terms of, and of course, I think they all are good actors, and of course, it's just layers on top of that.
They are bad liars, though. We've talked about
that. They are bad liars, yes. Some of them are getting better. Ferris Air was in this, which is, of course, owned by Carol Ferris, who is Hal Jordan, a.k.a. Green Lantern's girlfriend. We've seen Ferris Air in both Flash and Arrow. Felicity suggests a new drinking game that every time Merlin lies, you should take a drink, which I think would be an awesome drinking game. I'm going to go back and start watching season one right now, and I'll let you know how my weekend goes.
Yeah, I may have to be calling somebody to come check on you.
Yes, please. I'm just going to be drinking iced tea. But
oh, okay.
It'll be cool. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Tatsu shows up in her katana gear. Katana is her alter ego in the comics. She's a member of the Outsiders and also of the Justice League of America, and then more recently of the Justice League. She first appeared in the Brave and Bold number 200 back in the early 80s, by Mike Barr and Jim Aparo. So.
Well, one reference that wasn't in this episode, but was in my brain.
Yes,
but it would have been bad. They shouldn't have done this, but it was good in my brain. When Nyssa tried to stab him at the wedding, I just wanted him to grab that and go, "That's not a knife. That's a knife." But that's all I could think of.
She did have nice technique there with the palm strike on the hilt of the knife, but he had a good block. I think he grabbed the blade with his hand again, too. Didn't
yes.
He?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's getting good. No matter what ends up happening, I think he got some really good training while he was here. It was like a nice little superhero seminar that he attended while he was in Nanda Parbat. So, and one other little quick side note. When any of my children are engaged to be married, I vow not to have the awkward dinner conversation telling them that they will procreate to continue my lineage.
My lineage, right.
Yes, that's going to be on my plan of things not to do when I'm talking to my children. So,
well,
that's...
also, being that this is Mother's Day weekend, as we release this, I would also not refer to their female parent as a concubine. I'm just going to throw that out there.
That's frowned upon. I wish I'd remembered that before Mother's Day. That's
Happy Concubines Day. So, well, we have really overstayed our welcome this week, and that is definitely all we've got for Green Justice this week. But join us next week for the season finale as we decide whether or not this entire season was worth it. No, it's
worth it. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Arrow and Green Justice. And if you did, please make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. You can also contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. You can visit our Twitter, like us there at Green Justice Pod. Or you can go to our Facebook page and you can even leave us a message there like Matt did. Facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts that Josh and I host here on randomchatter.com, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. These shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.